We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Pro teams have millions to spend, and they don't always spend them wisely. But when it comes to a great shave, you don't have to shell out tons of cash. Harry's saw customers getting ripped off by the shaving industry with overpriced, underperforming products, and decided to do something better. They found their own way to make beautifully designed razors for a fraction of the price of the other big brands, so you never wonder if you overpaid. Harry's shaving products look great, and the weighted handle makes shaving feel great too. I like to keep my beard neat, and Harry's always leaves me with a smooth yet crisp shave. Harry's quality is top-notch, thanks to German-engineered blades made in their own factory that stay sharp longer. You can get a 5-blade razor, weighted handle, foaming shave gel, and a travel cover for just $3 at harrys.com/bluewire. And Harry's has the highest customer satisfaction in the shaving industry, plus a convenient subscription option that you can cancel at any time. Getting the best doesn't mean spending the most when you shave with Harry's. Get started with a $13 trial set for just $3 at harrys.com/bluewire. That's harrys.com/bluewire for a $3 trial set.
Back to some more questions, Ryan, and we'll stay at the pro day, and we'll talk about a couple more guys here in the pro from the pro day.
Coleman Smith had asked, how did Blake Fisher look at the pro day? I still think he should have played guard to be successful at Notre Dame. He could be dominant at left guard in the run game.
He didn't have to play guard in at Notre Dame to be able to play guard in the National Football League. Zach Martin has been arguably the best guard since almost the moment he arrived in the National Football League. He played left tackle his entire career. Doesn't he play right guard in the NFL?
Where's our guard?
Right. It's about your skill set. So Notre Dame needed to play him at the position that gave him the best chance to be part of a line that was at its best. And Ryan and I have talked a lot of times. If in a perfect world, you could have moved him to guard, but who are you going to play a tackle this year if you move Blake Fisher to guard? Right. I mean, so that if an NFL team thinks he can play guard, they're not going to care. Braden Smith was a tackle in college. Wasn't he a tackle at Auburn, or did he play guard at Auburn?
So he went, Braden Smith had a weird one. He was a tackle, then they moved him to guard, and then they moved him back to right tackle in the NFL. So he's been like kind of all over the place.
But no, at Auburn.
What? Auburn, he was a guard. He was a guard. He was a tackle, then a guard, and then they moved him to tackle when he got to the Indianapolis Colts.
You can do a lot of different. You can play a lot of different positions. Liam Eikenberg is starting at center in the NFL for the Dolphins this year. He's a left tackle at Notre Dame. Robert Hainsey played right tackle his entire career. He's been playing guard and center for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers.
Yep,
it really doesn't matter. They'll be able to make that transition. Could he be a dominant left tackle, left guard in a run game? I think based on the fact of what we thought Blake Fisher was coming into high college, yeah, sure. But Blake Fisher has never proven himself to be a dominant run blocker in college. He just hasn't. You know, does he have the potential to be so? Yes. But that's the enigma with Ryan Blake. We're still talking about the potential with him and not what he was. Because let's be honest, he's the polar opposite of Audric Estime. He does not have really good film. But there's enough flashes of that. You're like, boy, if I can get that out of him on a consistent basis, he could be a pretty good football player. I mean, you go watch Blake. If you're an NFL team and the only film you have of Blake Fisher from last year is the Ohio State game, you're going to tell me there's no way this kid goes past the second round.
Football season may be over, but the action on the floor is heating up. Whether it's tournament season or the fight for playoff home court, there's no shortage of high-stakes basketball moments this time of year. Get in on the excitement with Prize Picks, America's number one fantasy sports app, where you can turn your hoops knowledge into some serious cash. Prize Picks is the largest daily fantasy sports platform in North America. We are the easiest and most exciting way to play daily fantasy sports. It's just you against the numbers. Instead of battling thousands of other players, including pros and sharks, you pick more than or less than on 2 to 6 player stat projections and watch the winnings roll in. You can now win up to 100 times your money on Prize Picks with as little as 4 correct picks. You heard it. 4 correct picks. You can turn $10 into $1,000 with NBA, NHL, and college basketball entries today on Prize Picks, America's number one fantasy sports app. It is so easy to use. All you have to do is download the app in the App Store or Google Play Store, sign up, add some funds, and you're in. Then you just find your favorite player and decide more or less on the suggested stat. It really is that easy. The night I joined, I picked Hannah Hidalgo to have more than 14 points, Maddie Westbeld to have less than 10 rebounds, and Marcus Burton to have more than 18 points. And guess what? I hit on all three. Bing, bang, boom, baby. Money in my pocket. It was just that easy. Download the app today and use code IRISH for a first deposit match up to $100. Again, download the app today and use code IRISH for a first deposit match up to $100. Prize Picks. Pick more, pick less. It's that easy.
Pro teams have millions to spend, and they don't always spend them wisely. But when it comes to a great shave, you don't have to shell out tons of cash. Harry's saw customers getting ripped off by the shaving industry with overpriced, underperforming products and decided to do something better. They found their own way to make beautifully designed razors for a fraction of the price of the other big brands, so you never wonder if you overpaid. Harry's shaving products look great, and the weighted handle makes shaving feel great, too. I like to keep my beard neat, and Harry's always leaves me with a smooth yet crisp shave. Harry's quality is top-notch, thanks to German-engineered blades made in their own factory that stay sharp longer. You can get a 5-blade razor, weighted handle, foaming shave gel, and a travel cover for just $3 at harrys.com/bluewire. And Harry's has the highest customer satisfaction in the shaving industry, plus a convenient subscription option that you can cancel at any time. Getting the best doesn't mean spending the most when you shave with Harry's. Get started with a $13 trial set for just $3 at harrys.com/bluewire. That's harrys.com/bluewire for a $3 trial set.
That's what Blake said himself as well at the combine. They asked, you know, if there's a game that you could put on to show who Blake Fisher is as a football player, he said Ohio State. That was the first game out of his mouth.
I would show another game. I would show Clemson, which is good in the first half, really awful in the second half. That's what shows who Blake Fisher was. The Ohio State game may show what Blake Fisher can be, but that's the thing. But I thought he moved well. Relatively well at the pro day yesterday, right? The problem for him, and I feel bad for him, is he's working out with Joe Walt, who's one of the most natural athletes you're going to have in the draft. I mean, that's going to hurt him as well. But you saw some hip tightness. You saw him, he's constantly late with his hands, you know, and you could see guys working with him on that kind of thing. He had a solid day.
I think his ankles are very tight. You know, I think that he really struggles to redirect a little bit, which is, it's funny because people now, you know, because there's always the tackle versus guard debate with Blake Fisher, but there's some people, you know, more in the draft space that are like, he needs to be a tackle because he's got 34 plus inch arms. And I'm just like, man, I really don't care about his arm length. I really don't. I mean, he doesn't play with great length on film because I think that he has to overcompensate because I think he lacks lower body flexibility a lot of times, right? So I think he's a guard long term, but could a team give him a shot at tackle in the next level and let him fail there before they move him to guard? It's possible. The one positive I saw from yesterday was, as long as it wasn't a typo, Brian, is I think that he was up to 318 pounds.
Yes.
He was 310 at the combine. So that's good. I want Blake to be 320 plus in the next level. I do not want him to be close to 310.
He said he was around 315 coming in, is what he said, and he's trying to get up to 320 by the draft, is what he said, which is what he should have been at Notre Dame.
Yes.
I mean, yeah. The thing that's always puzzled me about Blake, and it's true in games, and it was true yesterday watching him in drills, I was floored when I saw that he had 34-inch arms, plus almost 34 and a half.
Longer than Joe Alt.
Because he constantly struggles to get hands on perimeter rushers. Because, like, we've talked about this, like Charles Jagsaw, even in the bowl game, even when Charles came out of his stance late, he was able to eventually get to the blocker because he was so long. But Blake would struggle with that because he doesn't use his hands correctly and he doesn't get that kind of extension. So I was shocked when I saw his arm length. But here's say it again, Ryan. Some NFL offensive line coach is going to watch that kid's film and be like, he's been with Harry Hiestand, he's been with Joe Rudolph. Like, I'm taking a chance on this kid.
Sure.
Late day two, you're going to have something. Now, whether the draft decision makers go with it or not, but on day two, you're going to have some offensive line coaches pounding the table for Blake Fisher because they think, you give me that kid, and I'll get him coached up, and that kid's going to be a dude, and we're going to get great value for him in the third round. Now, whether or not that's where he goes, because an O-line coach pounds on the table for it doesn't mean the decision makers are going to go with it. You know what I mean?
Right.
But I'll be shocked if that doesn't happen.
Well, I think the great thing that's still in Blake Fisher's favor is, although, you know, we've had this conversation over when is it going to happen? Like, is it going to ever happen? By my calculations, unless I'm missing someone, Blake Fisher is the youngest offensive tackle in the 2024 NFL draft class. He's even younger than Joe Alt. He's like 2 months younger, I think, than Joe. So he's young, man. He still has time. He still has developmental potential. There's no doubt. The one clip, though, I think kind of exemplifies the differences between Joe and Blake is that I don't know if you saw this video, Brian, but there was a video that was on Twitter earlier of an offensive line coach that was working both the guys out. And I think it was the new New England Patriots offensive line coach. I think it's Adam Peters is his name, but he had put his arms around both the guys' necks, right? And had them basically kind of backwards broad, you know, kind of to get their momentum going. And then he would pull them down to kind of test their balance, right? And he did Joe, and Joe, slight stagger, able to keep his feet, right? Because he's has a great bend and he's got really good balance. Blake, when he did it, fell flat on his face, right? Which I think just kind of exemplifies the difference between the two, right? I just think there's a little bit of tightness in the ankles with Blake. I think his hips are a little bit tightly wound. Like, I don't think he's a tackle, ultimately. Would I still draft him to transition into guard on the next level? Yeah, I could. And ultimately, if he does make good on that transition, let's just say he's a backup early on in his career, he could potentially get me out of a game at tackle, which is a big sticking point for offensive linemen on the next level. So I think there's still time for Blake, but he's going to have to be in the right situation with a good head on his shoulders, because Blake is a really good young man, but like, does he want it, right? Like, does he want it?
Yes.
If he wants it, I think he has a chance to be very good.
Really good kid. You know, I mean, I question his maturity, but as you said, he's young. You know, he's a young junior, but you talk about a kid who's constantly out in the community in South Bend, working with kids, being involved. Like, anytime Notre Dame had some sort, because like, not every player has to go to every community function, but you almost always saw Blake at those things. It was actually when you didn't see Blake at one of those things working with kids, it was almost like, wait a minute, where's Blake? You know, and that speaks volumes because he doesn't have to do that. There's a small minimum you have to go to, and Blake could say, I'll do my time and, you know, do whatever else. But you always saw Blake in those situations. And so, really good young man. But you're not drafting guys to, you know, go just into the really good priesthood or whatever. I mean, it's nice. Right. It's a check in your – but if you can't play, it doesn't matter how good of a kid you are. If it was about, you know, you're a quality human being, Ian Book would be starting for somebody. You know what I mean? Like, it's not about that. It's about, can you play? And Blake has tools, but he's got a ways to go. He's got a ways to go. We had a question down here that I want to address, Ryan, relative to a couple other things that are kind of going on. So I'll just kind of get to it now.
P. Weber said, if this is overstepping, just pass on my question, but wanted to make sure that all is good at IB with y'all. Seems like it's been the, been quite the eventful week. And then another cryptic tweet yesterday.
Yeah, I don't know that that was cryptic. I was pretty clear. There's some stuff going on. And for the time being, we'll be publishing our content at the Champions Lounge, not on any website. So I'm sorry that you took that as cryptic. I just was giving you guys a heads up. We're not going to be posting there for the time being. So essentially, I have a much longer post on this on the message board. But basically, there's been a, you know, you guys know what happened with SI a few months ago. Arena Group had SI, lost SI. We were part of the Arena Group as well. There's been a transition, and a new company has bought the Arena, or has bought SI. And the people that run Minute Media, who bought SI, have basically offered us a contract to take our site with them. And so we've chosen to do so. A lot of things going on, so et cetera, et cetera. I posted on the board. I don't care to get into it here. But essentially what that means, and I, Ryan and I had a meeting about this morning, is that for the next couple of days, at least, we don't have a site to post on. Like, our site is now live at two different places. And so there's just a lot that I don't want to get into, things that I can't say publicly because I'm not quite sure where things stand. But we are going to have a new home. The web address is not going to change. For the direct URL, you can always just do irishbreakdown.com and find it. But for the next couple of days, until this situation gets settled, it's not settled with us. We've signed our contract. We're ready to move forward. It's all going to be all good. But there's some stuff above us as publishers that has to get worked out before we have the ability to start publishing stories again. So some of this stuff will get back live on the site. But for and everything that we've had in the past, so like the scholarship page, the commit breakdowns, all that stuff still live. You can still see all that stuff if you want to reference it and all those type of things. So you'll be able to see that. But we're just in that transition. It's just a business deal that sometimes these things happen. And it was supposed to be a smoother transition, but things have happened outside of our control as publishers and outside of Minute Media's control that's kind of put a big roadblock in front of some things. But we'll be fine. We'll get through it. And I'm excited about the direction that we're going. So it's not a bad thing. It's actually a good thing. You know, as I share with Ryan, we got a better contract now. I'm excited about the direction of where we're going. It just means for a couple of days. But this is why it's great to have the Champions Lounge, Ryan, because they can do all this wrangling. Guess what we're doing? We're still producing content. Ryan, how many stories, how many posts of like interviews of 2026 recruits did you post on the message board this morning? Like
nine.
Yes. Nine. Right. Nine. So IB still producing content, everybody. We're just not doing it on the free sites for now. We'll get back to it once all this other stuff is going on. But Ryan posted a bunch of stuff on there. Sean Stiers posted an interview with Audric Estime from yesterday on there. So we've had at least 10 content pieces on the site, on the premium message board at boards.irishbreakdown.com. So it's a temporary thing. We'll get everything up and running again. This isn't like, hey, Ryan, take the next few days off. I'm taking the next few days off. I'll have my next two parts of the Mike Denbrock breakdown will be out tomorrow. It's like, I was going to do it Tuesday. Somebody tries to break into my house on Tuesday. Couldn't do it then. You know, Wednesday dealing with all that kind of stuff. Yesterday dealing with all this business stuff. I mean, Ryan, you know, I was in meetings from like 11 o'clock till I didn't sign my new contract till almost midnight. It just was one of those days. But we are rocking and rolling and still producing a ton of content. So just wanted to let you guys also know that. And then I also said to people that didn't hear it, we aren't really doing mailbags at the end of our shows anymore. There's a reason for that. It's not something that I will discuss publicly just because there's no way to say it where it won't come across in a negative way. It's a business decision that we are making. If you want to know why, I gladly will talk to you about it. It's just more of an off-platform type of thing. So you can shoot me an email at brian@irishbreakdown.com. You can send me a private message at boards@irishbreakdown.com. You can DM me, whatever the case may be. I'll go over it with you, but at the end of the day, it's a business decision that we've made, and how can we best maximize our time and profitability so that we can continue to grow as a company and continue to thrive as a company. And so I'll gladly explain that, but that's just kind of a business thing. There was a few questions about this in the chat. I just wanted to kind of knock that out, Ryan, so we could move on and get back to talking football, man. So Not the fun part of what we do. We have some super chats down here, Ryan. So let's rock through a few super chats here.
Okay. We had Lucky Ducks 512. Lucky Ducks, thank you so much. Always appreciate it. Which coach on the staff do you think you could beat in a 40-yard dash? Wow.
I don't know that I could run 40 yards without pulling something. So I'm not sure if I could really beat any of the coaches currently in a 40-yard dash.
I would two that I think I could take is Joe Rudolph is one just because he's a little bit older, right? He's a little bit older. So I'm picking on the old man, and I think I could beat Mike Denbrock. So I'm picking all the old guys on the staff, I guess. I think I could beat them.
At 40. That's elder abuse right there. Elder.
Maybe Al Washington. Maybe Al Washington. He's a little bit of a bigger guy. So
I've seen Al move around at practice. He's still a youngish guy. I think he might be able to take you. I'm not sure. We'll see. He was a he's a big guy.
Two out of three.
That's not bad.
But I think I could take Al though. I still think I could take Al. But
I know three guys I definitely could not beat in a sprint for sure. Yeah. Four really: Marcus Freeman, Mike Mickens, Mike Brown, and Dylan McCullough. All, and even though Dylan's 50, Dylan still looks like an athlete. I mean, he still looks like an athlete. You know what I mean? Like, he'd be that guy that would go to that. Like, if he wasn't a coach, he'd be that guy that would go to like that fantasy camp. You know, where the guys pay to play, and he'd be like just killing everybody. You know what I mean? Like, we're just only handing the ball to this guy. So I'm pretty sure I couldn't take those guys in a race. And Max Bull would probably still smoke me too. Max.
Oh yeah.
Max is still of age to play in the NFL. You know,
he's in pretty good shape too.
Yeah. So, very much so. He would very much so.
I think I could take Coach Biagi too. I think I could take him. I think I could.
He looks pretty athletic running around
practice. He's a little wiry, but like, yeah. I don't know. He's a specialist coach. So
I definitely can't beat him in a sprint. Yep. That's for sure.
Oh, Al Golden, too. I could definitely beat Al at this point.
Yeah, I don't know that Al Golden could make it 40 yards right now.
I don't think so either.
Yeah.
So both coordinators. I could take down both coordinators at least. Yeah. At least. Ida Benami
would I got to say this. It would be me racing Al Golden would be like that scene from Grown Ups. Remember where Kevin James and that other guy are like faking the injuries and they're like walking off the court. Like, that would be me and Al Golden limping to the 40-yard line. Like, oh gosh, you know, we'd be like, which injured person can get there first? That's pretty much what that would look like.
Yep. Ida Benhami with another super chat. Ida, thank you so much. Very appreciated, sir. Worst part of vacation: missing the big show. Major. What's FOMO?
I don't know what FOMO means.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah. Sorry, buddy.
I don't know what that means. My mind went to some bad language there.
Yes, yeah. I hope that's not it. I hope that's not what he was saying. So apparently, it means fear of missing out.
Oh, okay. There you go. Means, well, so. Never heard that one before. And I don't know if you guys know this, but I'm very hip. So if I don't know it, then that's pretty bad. Yeah, Rob Osgood. Rob, thank you so much. Super chat. Why don't running backs run the 40 from a true stance or with a football? I'd love to see true football measurements, offensive line time in the 10-yard from stance, for example. Because scouting is a really archaic thing where people don't change, Rob, and they've been doing it since the beginning of time. I don't have a true answer for you. I mean, they've always just been out of a track stance, and that's just kind of what it's always been. I think there should be more functionality to how a player tests compared to what they would be asked to do on a football field, but it's just not what's ever been. Man, this has just been the story of scouting and testing for as long as I can remember. So that is what it is.
I agree with everything Ryan said. I've said this before, Rob. I think that's what they should do. I think receivers should run 40-yard dash out of a receiver stance. I think running back should have to take an open step and sprint like they would as a running back. I think offensive linemen should run their sprints tackles out of a 2-point stance, guards and centers out of a 3-point stance. Like, I think all of that would make a ton of sense to me. That's where I think that they should go. But they're not like DBs, like, okay, you know, safeties can maybe run downhill, but you know, corners, I would say, you know, back pedal 5 yards and then open and run, you know, I'd give them two whistles. I'd have one, you know, one, I'd actually have their testing be on a, like, okay, you know, then you backpedal, second backpedal, open and run, and then test it that way. Like, that stuff would tell me a whole lot more about a guy's projection, his speed projection, than going over. But I'll say this too, the arrival of GPS has helped, I think, scouting a ton. Because, for example, Keon Coleman, what are you going to look at? The fact that Keon Coleman ran a 4.61, which I'm going to tell you all again, is not slow for a guy as big as he is. That's not slow. But yeah. Then you look at his time compared to the Troy Franklin kid from Oregon who ran a 4.4 as they're doing the gauntlet. And he was much faster.
Keon was the fastest wide receiver in the gauntlet. And right. He caught everything. So.
And that as a receiver's coach is going to mean a lot more for me for what he does, what his strengths are as a player than what he did in a stance like, you know, like if this was 1988, I might care more about that because they were playing out of a 3-point stance back then. You know what I mean? As receivers. But I think the arrival of GPS stuff and your ability to access GPS numbers that kids were doing in practices and in games and thing like stuff like that to me was I would think it has to be helping scouts a ton.
Well, there's a lot of players. Kind of stuff. There's a lot of players that are just opting out of testing altogether. I mean, like Marvin Harrison obviously did it, which was famous, you know, that he didn't do anything. He's, you know, combine and pro day. He's not participating in any of those testing. But also there was a Christian Boyd, who's a Northern Iowa defensive tackle who blew up the East-West Shrine game. He didn't even get an invite to the combine, and he chose to stay GPS timing on him, not to do any of the running stuff at the pro day, just do positional work in the 40 and the bench press. So I think that's going to become more of a thing that's going to happen. You know, I think we see this year of Marvin Harrison and like Malik Nabers and a couple other guys choosing not to test. We're going to see that more and more often moving forward because of the GPS technology.
And I think that's a good thing. Very much a good thing. I'm going to read this one, Ryan, because this is more up your alley, draft related, from Tyler Evans. He says, how deep is this O-line class in the NFL draft? And how many offensive linemen do you think are drafted in round one?
I mean, it's very deep, Tyler. It's probably one of the deepest I've seen in a couple years. I mean, the offensive tackle class, especially center class, is really good as well. True interior, like true guards in this class. I think that's not a great class, but I think it's okay. But I think altogether, it's a tremendous offensive line year. How many get in the first rounds? I mean, Joel Olufoshanu, Talese Fuaga out of Oregon State, Amarius Mims, J.C. Latham, Troy Fatanu, probably out of Washington, will be drafted. Jackson Powers Johnson out of Oregon will be drafted most likely in the first round. After that, I feel like I'm forgetting someone. I can't think of the offensive tackle that I'm forgetting. But I have seven right there. So I will say at least seven go in the first round, probably more eight-ish most likely in the draft, because then you're going to be talking about guys like Graham Barton out of Duke, Tyler Guyton from Oklahoma might be a guy that someone takes a chance on late in the first round. So I think that we could see upwards of 8 to 9, maybe even 10 guys, potentially. There's a lot of dudes in this draft at offensive line.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
What's crazy is there's a few positions that are really deep. And so, yeah. One of two things is going to happen. One is a really deep position is not going to see the run happen. And so you're going to see some guys that you might view as a first round player go in the round two. So like, let's just say hypothetically, Ryan, that the NFL teams just kind of decide that we've got to take advantage of the tackle depth. We've got to take advantage of the quarterback depth, or we got to take advantage of the cornerback depth in this draft class. So all of a sudden in round two, man, you're getting yourselves like the Bears are like, how are you not the Bears, but you know, Panthers or teams like that. Like, how did this receiver fall to us at the beginning of round two? Like something like that, you know, whether it's a Keon Coleman or Brian Thompson, whoever. Or it could happen at tackle, or it could happen at corner, because like you can't draft all those guys. Like if you look at all the corners, quarterbacks, receivers, and tackles, that's almost the whole first round. You know, there's some edge guys that are going to get drafted too, you know what I mean? So it's like you're going to get at those positions early in the second round, most likely at one of or two of those positions, some really good players falling. Because of the depth of a few of these positions, you know, and at some positions too, Ryan, the second thing is at some positions, the top players of those positions, you're going to get much lower. There's a chance you're going to get the best edge in this draft class or whoever you perceive to be the best edge somewhere between 10 to 15, potentially, you know what I mean? And so that's what also makes this fascinating And that's one of the things I love about the draft, is because it's not about who's the best player going number one, who's the best player going number two, who's the best player going number three. It's not always like that. And it's going to be fun.
I think what evens out those runs potentially too is that it's a bad running back class at the top. So it's not going to be a guy that's going to join the first round. Safety class, more than likely not going to be a safety in the first round. Linebacker class, more than likely not going to be a linebacker in the first round. So there's a few positions that, I mean, I even think the depth of the linebacker is pretty good, but like the top of the linebacker class, not good this year. Like it's just not like overly good. So a couple of positions I think are going to get completely shut out in the first round as well, which will allow for some of those runs to happen. We have Tyler Evans with the super chat. How do you transfer to Iowa? And thank you so much for the super chat. How do you transfer to Iowa and then transfer back to Bama? I don't think he was ever enrolled in classes, right? Wasn't that the whole thing? He wasn't enrolled officially at Iowa?
I don't know.
That's what it was.
I don't know. But it wouldn't matter anyway, because they've gotten rid of any restrictions at all right now on transferring. I mean, sadly, you can transfer as many times as you want now and don't have to sit out. It's just, I am so tired, Ryan, of people talking about NIL's ruining college football. NIL's not doing a dang thing to college football right now, except make it better, in my opinion. Yeah. What's ruining college football is this. Because here's the deal. Oh, no, you're wrong, Brian, because look at all these kids getting money to go from this school to that school. Exactly. It's because of the portal. It's the open portal is the problem. Because guess what? Caden Proctor would either A, have never left Bama in the first place, or B, would have already signed his paperwork and been committed to to Iowa, and he wouldn't be able to do all this kind of stuff. So there's some clear maturity problems going on there with that young man as well. Like just very – and you hear the reasons why, the rumblings about why he transferred back and all that. It's just – it's kind of ridiculous. And so to me, that's the problem. It's not NIL. It's not that these kids are getting a piece of the pie. If they do a rev share, it won't be rev share that's ruining college football. Well, it's the attitudes. Yes, the attitudes are coming. Why is Nick Saban having the conversation with his current players about how much am I going to pay me or play or I'm going to leave? Why is he having that debate? Because they know they could just leave at any time and play anywhere for whatever reason. Sure. And I've said this before. I don't agree with that. I think there are certain circumstances that should allow players to leave whenever they want. There are certain circumstances, but it should not be the rule. And now that there's the rule of you can transfer more than once without sitting out, it's just nonsense. So that's the problem. It's not NIL. It's pay for play. I get that. But without the portal being what it is, the whole pay for play thing is really only a high school thing, which is bad enough, but it's not a college thing. Okay, fine. You want to go sit out a year and not play and lose your brand value? Fine. Go for it. Go for it. Have fun with that. But that's the bigger problem for me. It's not NIL. It's the transfer portal being as wide open and insane as it is right. When people say Wild Wild West, in my mind, I don't care. I don't think one bit about NIL when people talk about Wild Wild. It's this stuff and the tampering that's being allowed to happen in the transfer portal. That's the problem.
Well, and the Caden Proctor situation is awful because I saw someone report that. So first and foremost, Iowa had the self-reports a recruiting violation of talking to him while he was still at Alabama, right? So like that's a recruiting violation. So they had to self-report themselves. And then he comes there, never practices with the team, but has an NIL, some type of NIL opportunity there. So he made a substantial amount of money at Iowa and never did anything for the program, like literally self-reported and never got him on the field either. And then he transfers back to Alabama. It was just a terrible situation, man. I honestly, I know the self-reporting and they're tampering technically or whatever, but like every team does that, right? Every team does that. I feel bad for the University of Iowa. He was literally committed to Iowa, flipped to Bama last minute, finally decided, looks like maybe he's maturing and he's going to come back to Iowa, back home after the coaching change. And then he burns them again. Like, feel bad for Iowa, man. I just feel bad for them.
It's ridiculous. It's just, what we're doing right now and the lack of developing young people that's going on right now is just really sad. It's very, very sad.
We had a question from the history expert. I have complete confidence in Mike Mickens, but how common is it for a single coach to coach the entire secondary?
It's not as common as it used to be. I mean, you still have it, but nobody that I know of coaches the entire secondary by themselves with no other assistants. I mean, Notre Dame's going to have a GA that's working in the secondary with either Mickens or the safety group. You've got Marty Biagi working with the safeties in certain times. You've got Al Golden is going to spend some time there, as we saw in the practice that we had available the other day. Marcus Freeman is going to spend some time there. So there's been some strange arguments on the message board about this. And, like, you know, they should have a GA there, not Marty Biagi. I'm like, guy's been a co-coordinator at the FCF level, but apparently he's not qualified to coach the safety position as well as a GA. Could coach the safety position.
Why can't you have both? I mean, that's
which they will. That's the thing. They will. But I'm like, Marty Biagi already works with these safeties on a daily basis as a special teams coordinator. And again, Mike Mickens is still in control of that. This is just really about individual drills. That's really when it comes down to. And so Mike Mickens already had to be involved with what, I mean, he was the pass game coordinator of the defense last year, which meant a lot of what was going on, he had a say over and had to have responsibility and accountability for as position coach. So his role's not changing as much as I think people think it is. Right. And so I think he'll be able to handle it fine, in my opinion. But if they were asking him in today's game to coach five DB positions all by himself with maybe just like one GA assisting, I'd be like, guys, that's not the right way to go about it, in my opinion. It really isn't, but that's not what they're doing, right? It's not what they're doing. It's very fair question, though.
All right, we had Adam Benami with a question. He says, I know it's a camp and no pads, etc., but Daniel Anderson got MVP of one. Good to see him getting some publicity. Yeah, so Daniel Anderson, the 2025 running back out of Bryant, Arkansas, is committed to Notre Dame, did win the running back MVP at the Dallas Under Armour camp. You are correct there. Yep. Which is good to see. I mean, because I saw the list. There was some good running backs there. And Daniel Anderson won the MVP, which was good. So
Ryan, the thing about Daniel Anderson, he's a really good back. He's just questioned the projection to the next level with the athleticism, but he's got really good vision, really nice feet. It's just strong. How will he perform at the next level? Is he fast enough? Is he explosive enough? And those type of things. But you pop on the film when he's healthy, he's good back. He's a good back, and he's been totally bought in at Notre Dame as a commit, which was – so anytime a kid that's so pro Notre Dame and outwardly Notre Dame has a win like that, it boosts the perception of the class to other recruits. Wow, that Notre Dame running back commit went down in Dallas and with some dudes and performed well. That class is maybe a little better than I thought it was, because he's not even one of the top guys.
No.
I think I have him like second to last on the offensive class. From a ranking standpoint, second or third to last in the class. So he very good for him. I like that kid too, Ryan. He's been bought into Notre Dame from the day he committed, man. Yep. And you love to see that.
Agreed. And he came on the show. He's a good dude. The history expert with another question says, was Joshua Burnham moved from linebacker to Viper and then moved again to Big N, or was it straight to Big N? I still think he would be a great Viper.
It was linebacker to Viper, and then this offseason to Big End. I think he could be a very good Viper, but the reality is it's about putting your best 11 on the field. And of the guys playing Viper, they felt Josh Burnham had the best chance to transition over and be an impactful player at the Big End position. We'll see if they're right or not, but that's the decision they made.
I did see in his media availability, he does look like he is filling out very well. So
I was told he's over 250 now. Yeah. And they list him at like 240 something on the roster, but I was told by somebody close to this situation that he's actually been over 250 for a little bit this offseason, and he's carrying.
He looks like 250 plus. I would believe it. I believe it.
Yeah.
Right. We had another one from Ina Benami. He's flooding it today. Love it. Is it hard to move from right guard to left guard? Same for tackle as well. I mean, it's a transition. I think if you ask any offensive lineman, they always talk about the transition from one side to the other, because it is not an easy thing. I mean, you have to think about it. It's like if you were trained to do something one way your entire life, right? And then all of a sudden someone's like, you have to do the exact opposite. It's going to be a difficult thing, right? I mean, so it's not natural. It's not. So a guy that's been playing, let's just say hypothetically, left tackle his entire life, and then all of a sudden you're like, you have to go play right tackle. You have to reprogram yourself a little bit, man. It starts from the basics. I mean, it's as simple as different foot back and then be able to work on a different angle from a different body positioning perspective. I mean, so it's not an easy thing at all. It really isn't. Hand dominant, foot dominant. It's a it is a big transition, you know, it's, which is why if you do see a guy like transition to a guard from a tackle, usually they stay on the same side, right? So if it's a left tackle moving inside, usually they'll play left guard, vice versa, right tackle to right guard. Moving from one hand to the other, opposite, it's not an easy thing. It's a pretty difficult thing, actually.
It varies from player to players too, Ryan. That's the thing. Is like some guys can make that move, no problem. Zach Martin went from left tackle to right guard pretty cleanly. Some guys can't go from right tackle to left tackle. Some guys just can't do it. There was a unique case. You remember Bob Whitfield for the Falcons?
Yeah, offensive tackle.
He could only play left tackle because he was blind in one of his eyes, so he couldn't play the other side. But that's a rare case. It's usually some guys just can't switch feet. And I've had receivers that way, Ryan. It's not often, but I've had a couple receivers that like could not go, because I was always like a inside foot up guy. It wasn't a huge deal, but look, normally the way that we taught routes would kind of marry up with that. But some guys just felt it was awkward for them to switch from side to side. So no matter what side they naturally just put one foot up over the other. Some guys, it's weird. It's like some guys just aren't comfortable putting the ball as a running back in an opposite hand. They always like, why did this guy always put his right hand? Because he's not comfortable putting his left hand. It's weird. But some people are like, some people it's natural going from right to left.
When we did some like under over front type of stuff, I would come down to the line of scrimmage a ton and rush the passer. And I was always comfortable more from the left side rushing than the right side. For whatever reason, just having the different foot up and rushing from that angle, I was a lot more comfortable than the other way. So there's just, I think it's a little bit of a mental thing as well, you know, just kind of doing something that you're more comfortable with, whether it's a dominant hand or a dominant foot. But regardless, it is a transition for most people. Lucky Ducks 512. Where would you rank Dylan Faison as a prospect? Top 300, top 150? How would you rank him?
I haven't graded him yet, Ryan, so yeah. I don't have an official grade, but I could comfortably say my gut is he'll at least be a top 300 guy. Like,
oh, yeah.
But, you know, will he be a top 100 guy, top 150 guy, top 250 guy? I haven't really got into that thought process yet. I've watched him. I liked him. He can play. I can identify his positives and the areas where he's going to have to develop. So my gut is I really like the kid. Have I got into going through the grading process? No, and I won't with sophomores. I'll wait till I see junior film before I officially rank them and grade them. But what I can comfortably say, and Ryan's not in agreement, as I said it, we're on the same page, this is a good football player. This is a take that I'm totally fine with. This is a smart take. Even if he's just normal sophomore to junior to senior progression, this is a Notre Dame level kid. The question now is, when he fills out, does he make a big jump to become a good football player or a great prospect? That remains to be seen. He's got 2 years to figure that out. But for now, smart take, totally fine with it. If Jordan Faison was simply some lacrosse player at West, you know, Florida Gulf Coast, and this kid got offered, I'd say, yeah, take him. Right? I mean, my evaluation of him has nothing to do with who his brother is. It's a cool story, but I'd take him even if his brother wasn't Jordan Faison at Notre Dame. Right? Not every brother can play like the other brother.
Yeah.
Right. But this kid can flat out play and is a better high school receiver already than Jordan was, because Jordan didn't play receiver.
Jordan never played receiver. Yeah.
So he's a quarterback. He's a good football player.
I liked him a lot. And I will safely say that after watching his lacrosse film, he is a 5-star lacrosse player as well. So yeah, I like him. Like him a lot. Great kid too. One of the most mature kids I've ever talked to at that age. Lucky Ducks.
Both 512. Of them were that way. It's like, because we actually had both of them on our show. Because for some of you, remember, we had Jordan and Luke Talich on together during our signing day special for the 23 class, because we tried to tell you all then, like, these are not your typical walk ons. Now, did we foresee Jordan Faison doing did as a freshman? No, no, he didn't. Could I have seen him doing that by his junior year? Absolutely. Like, absolutely, I could have seen that. But as a freshman, no, he was way better than we thought. But we knew this kid can play football, man. This kid's a good football player. These are really good athletes. And so to have both of them on is, I thought, Brian, a pretty cool deal. Yep.
Absolutely. Pretty cool deal. Lucky Ducks 512. Which group will have a bigger impact on the secondary if they step up? The linebackers being elite or the Viper and Big Ends being elite? Oh, pass rush for the secondary? I mean, I think generally speaking, because I think Notre Dame is going to have some really good coverage players in the secondary. Obviously, Benjamin Morrison with Christian Gray and Jaden Mickey and the safeties. But any defensive back will tell you their best friend is a great pass rush, right? Because that just means you have less time to cover. I mean, naturally, right? So linebackers help, of course, you know, understanding how to get under short zones and being able to help in certain situations, sure. But I would say pass rush is a coverage player's best friend.
100% agree. 100% agree.
We had Paul Hamilton said, please rank the head coaches that you would say are better than Marcus Freeman. All of them?
I don't know about better. It's just, it's about being proven, right? I mean, Marcus Freeman's been a head coach for 2 years. So, you know, pick any coach that's had a tenure of success. I mean, you're date Kalen DeBoer. I mean, but those guys have been doing this for a lot longer. I mean, you could say, well, you know, Steve Sarkisian's better. Is he better right now? Probably. You know, was he as good as Marcus Freeman through his first 2 years? Very debatable. Yeah. You know, and so it wasn't until like year five he started to break out a little bit at Washington. So, I mean, that's a long list right now, Paul, just because I think being a great coach is not about who's the smartest guy, who's the best, who's proven it. It's about results. And Marcus Freeman has 19 wins as a coach in 2 years. So, you know, if we're doing like what would be a more interesting discussion, Paul. So I mean, I there's a lot of coaches that right now should be ranked higher ahead of Marcus Freeman. I mean, Jeff Brohm should be ranked ahead of Marcus Freeman. Mike Norvell should be ranked ahead of Marcus Freeman because those guys have a much longer track record of success than he does, just simply put. So I think what would be a more fun conversation, Paul, is sort of doing like a futures debate. You know what I mean? Like, who do you project over the next 5 years will have the biggest impact as a head coach? I think that is where you could maybe get into a conversation of where does Marcus Freeman rank in a group of top 10 coaches? But if I was doing a ranking of top 10 coaches right now in that college football, I wouldn't have Marcus Freeman in the top 10. I'd have Brian Kelly ranked higher than him because, again, Brian Kelly is a longer track record of success, right? Would I rather have Marcus Freeman or Brian Kelly as the head coach of Notre Dame? I would much rather have Marcus Freeman as the head coach of Notre Dame. There's a lot of coaches that I would rank ahead of Marcus Freeman right now that I would not trade Marcus Freeman for that coach, right? If we're doing, like, who do I want running the program right now? But if I'm doing a ranking of today, where coaches are, I'd have other, like, I'd have Lane Kiffin ahead of Marcus Freeman. Would I trade right now Marcus Freeman for Lane Kiffin? No, I would not. Right? Because that's a different conversation, right?
You have to keep Lane away from the co-eds too. Right. Yeah.
No comment on that one. But yeah, he has a lot to prove as a head coach. I like the direction he's going. I think, man, maybe we should do that this offseason, Ryan. I'm gonna make a little note of that, Paul. So you just sparked sort of a futures debate with the coaches about projecting moving forward, you know, because then you say, well, where does Steve Sarkisian rank right now? People, you know, all these rankings overhype the most recent season. Like, I've seen people put Steve Sarkisian in the top five head coaches. No, he's not. He's not a top five head coach. He's had one season of over 8 wins in his career before last year. One. I think he had a 9-win season at USC. Actually, you know what? I don't even – hold on a second, Ryan. Did he even have that? I think he had one 9-win season at USC, but I could be completely wrong on that. Let me pull this up. No. Yes, he did. He went 9-4 in 2014. And Steve Sarkisian has been a head football coach for 10 years. This will be year 11. His team has finished in the AP top 25 4 times. And twice they were ranked number 25. His first 2 years, they were 12-13. You know, but again, he's been doing this 10 years. Is he one of the best 10 coaches, 5 coaches in college football? Heck no. If I was doing a debate about who will be the top 5 over the next 5 years, okay, let's have that conversation because of where things are trending, what I believe of him and his offensive genius, the staff he's put together, the way they're recruiting, the season they had. I'd be willing to have a conversation if we're betting on the future of coaches. But there's no way right now I'm putting Steve Sarkisian ahead of Brian Kelly. If we're evaluating overall a proven track record, because otherwise we're just going off of who did what in the most recent season. If I was going to have Kalen DeBoer in the top 5, it's not because they went to the championship last year. It's because the guy was brilliant at Washington for 2 years, did a great job at Fresno State, and has a track record of success beyond just the last year. But when a guy's been a head football coach for 10 years at big-time Power 5 schools, Washington, USC, Texas, and only has one season of more of 10 or more wins, you're not a top five coach. I don't care what you did this most recent season. Otherwise, people say, why does Mark Helfrich not a head football coach right now? Why is he doing TV? Because he took a team to a national championship game, produced a Heisman Trophy winner. Right? Because one season doesn't define you. It's about a track record of success. Larry Coker, put him in the Hall of Fame, baby, won a national championship, played for another. Right? No, he wasn't a very good coach. So we need to see it long term. But I think the futures debate would actually be a lot of fun. And Paul, you just gave us a great idea about a show that we're going to have here moving forward. I think that'll be a fun show.
Way to go, Paul.
Yeah, good job, Paul. And I'm not Coleman's being sarcastic about that either, Paul. I'm not taking a shot. I think that's that sparked, I think, what'll be a fun conversation to have down the road. It's a very fair question. Very fair question.
Coleman Smith says, how do the pre-draft interviews usually go, and what are the weirdest questions you've ever heard, Ryan? Oh my gosh, what are the weirdest? Well, there's a couple questions that I can't say on the air that get asked to some of these guys. So pre-draft interviews, there's obviously segments in the Senior Bowl. There are segments in the NFL Scouting Combine. There are formal and informal meetings. So for a couple of those meetings, there's time limits. You know, I think it used to be 15 minutes, I think teams usually got. I feel like the time has probably changed at this point. But then you have the top 30 visits, Coleman. And then also teams set up Zoom meetings with players as well. And those Zoom meetings, like, they can stay on as long as they want, right? So in those meetings, a lot of scouts are going to grill prospects. They're going to ask very deep, intimate questions about family, about playing experience, a lot of stuff, right? There are some scouts that kind of take it overboard at times, to be honest with you. I mean, I will say this. Like, I could probably put a couple of them on the board that are a little bit probably inappropriate for the air, but probably better for closed doors as far as like some things that are asked. But I think I'm trying to think of one that it's nothing like crazy. I mean, there's been like people that would ask like stuff like, you know, if you were a specific type of, like, if you were any type of animal, what would you be? And then there's like some psychology behind like what you pick determines like how tough of a person you are and stuff like that. But there has been some weird questions that have been asked. Like, you know, do you like all right, here's a weird one that I heard 2 years ago. A team asked a player toilet paper, right? Toilet paper. When you have the toilet paper on the roll, does the part that comes, is it go over top down or do you go underneath down? And apparently there's some psychology over how you set up a toilet paper roll that I don't know. And then also, how do you wipe if you're a stand-up wiper or if you're a sit-down wiper? Apparently there's a lot of stuff like that. So there's a lot of psychology involved, believe it or not. I don't know.
I'd be like, man, you need to seek help. Like, yeah. I don't know why you're asking a 20-year-old, 21-year-old how he wipes. Like, you need to seek Jesus. Like, that, you need some help, man. That's just ridiculous.
I would say the greatest response I've ever heard to a question was during media availability. Do you remember Trey Adams that played at Washington? He was the left tackle. Someone asked him if he could improve one thing about himself, what would it be? And he said a bigger member would be what he would ask for from that person. And
interesting. All right, here we go.
very honest about it
here
too.
We go. Okay, cool. Here we go.
Ida Badabi is accepting a commitment with 2 years of high school left too early for you guys?
It depends on the player. I mean, that's not an absolute question. Would I be more hesitant to take a guy that's got 2 years of high school left? Yeah, I would. Is there any reason, like, what else do I need to see from a guy like Dylan Faison in a year where I know I'm going to take three or four receivers in the class? No, I'm good. I just need to make sure he doesn't regress. But you're not going to know that. But I mean, the reality is it's hard to wait as well if you're Notre Dame, because you're going to wait till everybody else gets involved in a kid, you know? So I would be real hesitant not to fill up too fast, Ryan, but I'm also okay taking a kid 2 years. Like, if Jackson Cantwell wanted to commit tomorrow, I'm not gonna be like, hold off, man. Let's see a little bit more film of you. Like, if Jackson Cantwell is the same player as a senior that he is right now, I'm taking him. Yeah. I mean, you know, like, Some kids are that way. Other kids are not. Other kids, I'm like, yeah, I like him, but let me see more of him. Like, if Joey Bryan wanted to commit today, I'd take him. Now, I wouldn't know necessarily where I'm going to play him. That's going to be determined by the next couple of years, but I know that kid can play for me somewhere, and I'd take him right now. So there's kids like that, but there's other kids like, I like that kid. I just want to see him develop a little bit more and see kind of what he has, and I'd wait a little bit. But there's some that I would definitely take now, absolutely, and be excited about it.
Yep. If you love a player, you take them when they want to come. That's mm-hmm. where it comes down to, right?
As long as you've done your due diligence, right? Getting to know the kid, exactly.
Sure. If you just like them, mm-hmm. then that probably means that you need to see a little bit more, right? Yeah.
This is from Iden Benami. He says, Ryan Roberts, double R. How did you like Indy? And what was the best part of your trip besides the combine?
I mean, I always love going to Indianapolis for the combine. This was my third combine. It's one of my favorite weeks. It's just where all the draft nerds and all the draft scouts and everybody involved go to one spot, which is awesome. Over 300 players, obviously, in the 2024 NFL draft class. So I really enjoy it. You know, the media availability. I know a lot of people like going into, so the last 2 years we've been able to go into Lucas Oil Stadium for the actual event, the on-field testing. I actually don't like going into Lucas Oil Stadium. I've done it twice the last 2 years, but it's more like just cool to be in Lucas Oil Stadium than actually being there for the combine. Like, I would rather just watch the broadcast than to see it worked in person. If I was allowed on the field, that opinion would change very much so, but like, you're just in the stands. Like, it doesn't really do anything for me to be in the stands versus being in the just watching the broadcast. But overall, I think the favorite part outside of the actual combine, I think, is just Indianapolis is a really kind of like tight knit spot. So like, you can walk anywhere that you need to go. I mean, whether it's Prime 47 or St. Elmo's or High Velocity, the bar there, right? Like, you can kind of get to anywhere in a pretty reasonable distance of walking, which is really nice. My favorite moment from this past year was, I haven't told anybody this actually outside of like my wife and stuff. So I was at a bar one night in particular, and I got tapped on the shoulder, right? I'm just talking to a couple guys. I got tapped on the shoulder, and a guy said, can you move for a second? We're taking a picture. I'm like, oh yeah, sure. Whatever. So I moved over. I turn around and it's Jerry Jones with a few people. And I'm just like, Jerry Jones is like 3 feet away from me. That's wild. And then he just kind of meanders off to his limo after that. So it's kind of just really cool to be able to see everybody there from the scouting side, obviously the team personnel side, the player side. It's the one big event every single year where everyone is isolated in that one spot, which is kind of cool to me.
I got a funny story kind of along those lines for you, Ryan. When I was coaching, I got to know a scout for the Colts a long time ago. I highly doubt he's still scout. He may not even be alive. He was an older guy. He invited me to their training camp, which was at the time at Rose Holman in Terre Haute. I don't know if there's isn't Terre Haute, but Rose Holman College is where they had their practice. So I get there and I'm sitting down at breakfast. Like, they got a dorm room for me. They had extra dorm rooms. Like, they had a couple like guest coaches that were there and stuff like that. And there was a guy from Purdue was there. There was a couple other guys there. And so we got us a room, stayed for a few days. And I sit down at breakfast the first day, and I'm sitting on the edge of the table and I'm eating some cereal or something. Peyton Manning sits next to me, and then Edgerrin James sits across from me, and Peyton's just reading his newspaper. And I'm just like, what is going on right now? Like, and they start talking. I'm just like, I didn't say a word, man. I didn't know what to say. Do you guys mind? I'm trying to eat breakfast here. You know what right, I mean? Seriously. But yeah, it's pretty wild. It's pretty wild. So yeah. It's
like, can I add to this conversation? I didn't, my worst part of the combine was meeting Tommy Guns in person. Absolutely terrible.
Be nice. Tommy is the man.